On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're all fur and fangs with Sarah Michelle Gellar in Paramount Plus's Wolfpack, experimenting with a little brutal honesty along with Jason Segel and Harrison Ford in Apple Shrinking, and living in a superpowered world in Disney Plus original show Extraordinary. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV Podcast, your weekly guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that would like to extend our emotional support to all of you still reeling from the gut punch of that first magnificent episode of The Last of Us. But we will be talking about other things that aren't The Last of Us in this show, because there are many other shows out this week, and to help me sort through the televisual detritus to come up with the rare nuggets of genius are my two co-hosts. First up, of course, our very own purveyor of outsize-handled mugs, a potter of no small renown, it's Kay Ribeiro.
Hello.
How are you doing, Kay?
Very good, thank you. I liked how you said extraordinary, like Alan Partridge.
Well, actually, it was a bit Partridge. Extraordinary. But it was more of a kind of throwback mockery to our very own Terry White. He used to go, it's extraordinary, every time she reviewed something. So I miss her, really, more than ever today. I wish she was reviewing this because she could literally call it extraordinary. But it is not just Kay here today. We are also joined by Pilot TV's beating heart. I refer, of course, to the notorious B-O-Y-D. How are you, Boyd? You good?
Thanks. I'm glad you made a topical reference to my beating heart, considering my high blood pressure issues that I've just told you about.
We've got a situation here.
Yeah. Apparently, it's exposure to me should be avoided at all costs.
Yes.
Because Boydie has high blood pressure.
Yeah. Adding to the stress.
I'll try not to stress you out any more than normal.
Careful.
So coming up this week, our retro spoiler special on Breeders, which we're going to be covering now.
Oh, my God. That's probably what started it all.
Yeah, it probably is.
I bet. If we go back in time, when did this high blood pressure issue start? Well, massive argument with a massive bell in the back. Program.
Yeah. It's true. It's fair. I apologize, Boyd. I'm sorry to do this to you. But hey, look, you know, I said we were done talking about The Last of Us.
No, I don't even know why you even said that.
I mean, I lied.
Of course, you lied.
Fundamentally,
no one took you seriously.
I fundamentally lied, and mainly because next Monday, as in the next podcast that goes out, we'll also see the release of our first Last of Us spoiler special podcast, which drops on Boyd Hilton's OnlyFans, otherwise known as Pilot Plus. You'll be able to hear me, Nick DeSamlin, Helen O'Hara, and Amon Warman talking about the first three episodes in forensic detail, as well as hear from the show's creators Neil Druckmann and Craig Mazin. But that's not all. Because also on Pilot Plus, I actually dropped a special bonus this week in the form of our Art of Storytelling panel from the live 200th episode. Those of you who were there on the day, who saw it, will know that it was an absolutely brilliant one. And this saw Terry talk to Sarah Phelps, Joe Barton, Jack Rook, and Sophie Petzl, all about the art of telly storytelling, as well as drawing out each of their stories on their biggest fuck-ups, which was a lot of fun as well. So that is on Pilot Plus 2. And this week's Pilot Plus, we're going to be talking about Lockwood & Co., which is Joe Cornish's new show, which doesn't make it into this Monday broadcast because, it's embargoed. So, you know, we'll be talking about that on Pilot Plus as well.
In case people think we're deliberately holding back the good stuff, like Lockwood & Co.
Yeah.
Slash, who knows if it is good? Can't say.
Yes, but we can't say. Embargo. We don't want to spoil it.
But we're not. It's embargoed. We are genuinely embargoed. Yeah. So it just so works out that by the time Pilot Plus drops.
Yes. The embargo
on Thursday, the embargo lives.
Yes.
Pretty much that day or the day before or whatever. Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So we are fine to talk about it.
I'm just confirming that you're not bullshitting everyone.
Excuse me.
You're not swindling everyone.
They trust me. These people trust me. Of course they do. Okay. Look at my face. Is this the face of a man who would lie to you?
No,
it is not. I am Honest James. That's what they call me.
Well, it's one of your names.
No one has ever called me that.
That's absolutely true. Fine, look, enough shilling for Pilot Plus. Apologies to those of you who don't want to hear about it. Please give us your money. It's only $1.99. EmperorOnline.com/PilotTV. Let's hear what you've been watching this week. What have you been watching?
Okay.
I have been watching The Sex Lives of College Girls.
You perv.
Do you know what? I think you spoke about it last podcast and I routinely ignored you, and then I discovered it for myself and found it very, very funny. I started on series 2 episode 1, but actually I want to go back and watch it from the start, and I was just like refreshingly surprised about how funny it was, because I don't find teen dramas that funny usually.
And then comedies.
Yeah, comedy, sorry, yeah. And actually, do you know what, at the end, when I watched credits and I saw Mindy Kaling's name, and I was like, oh, of course, that's why it's funny.
Told you it was Mindy Kaling last week on the podcast.
I know.
In one ear and out the other.
It was a zone out.
Yeah.
But the thing I liked about it most was that it's got a really funny Asian lead character. You know, it was just like sassy and fun and like all the rest of it, and just wasn't stereotypical, which is quite, you know, as I said, refreshing for an Asian character, an Asian lead, in my opinion.
See, I quite want to watch that, but when I saw it was season two and I realised we'd... I genuinely don't know when we missed season one.
Like, because you ignored it, probably.
I mentioned it. It was ITV2, James.
And
right. I blame you for your... Not only... I think your ITV2 bias is probably even greater than your ITV1 bias. So I think... I don't think I even mooted it for review, but it was on ITV2. It's now moved to ITVX, which is... Yeah, maybe you're probably slightly more open to it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I've been watching that, and I would recommend that. And also went to the screening of The Diplomat yesterday, which is going to be on Alibi. It's coming up. Obviously, can't talk too much about it, but it's written by Ben Richards and has a stellar cast, including Sophie Rundle, Danny Sapani, Stephen Cree, and Serena, I can't say her name, Mintegi? I'm going to say that. Let's go with that, right?
Ben Richards, who wrote the first season of Strike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was at Battersea Power Station, which I'm not sure if you've been to. Sorry for anyone who's not, you know, it's very London-centric talking about this, but it's incredible in there. And they served the best canapés and drinks. So on that basis alone, I could recommend
this
it.
This is what we want to hear. What were the canapés then?
Oh my God, delicious. Because it's set in Barcelona. Are you being sarcastic?
No.
I will tell you.
No, go on. You know, I told you it was filmed in Barcelona, of course, by the way. Remember that as well?
Yeah.
Filmed entirely on location in Barcelona.
Sure. Yeah. anyway, they served olives and manchego cheese. We had like croquetas. Yeah, very nice. Delicious.
Did you have patatas bravas?
No, but we had padrón peppers. Delicious.
Did you have patatas bravas? Patatas bravas are quite messy, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
All the oily mayonnaise.
I just like the idea that they're just angry potatoes. I think that's just a great concept.
Yeah, that's quite funny.
Yeah, and little bottles of...
water.
Beer?
No.
No, salt?
Well, they had
smoothies.
They had beer, but they had like... it wasn't champagne. It wasn't Prosecco. It was...
Carver.
Carver, of course. Carver. That's it with straws. So obviously got quite pissed. And yeah.
No, that explains a lot.
Just to be clear, after we spoke yesterday, you went off to Battersea Power Station on your own and got twatted. That's essentially what we're saying.
Pretty much.
Okay.
That's what I'm tired today.
Okay.
Yeah. She watched a show that she clearly cannot remember anything about.
No, I can, but I think it's embargoed. I can't say anything.
So you said it's in Barcelona.
Yes, I did. Instead, I've reviewed the canapés.
Okay.
So
that's
more, I'll review it later when it comes out.
Right. Okay.
That's what I've been watching.
Excellent.
I did a two launch day this week. A double launch. So in the morning, I went to see Nolly, which is the new Russell T Davies drama series for ITVX.
Excited about that.
That's also embargoed. And we will be hearing from Russell T Davies in the next episode, because I've conducted that interview with him for the podcast. And then in the evening, I went to see a show called The Gold, which has kind of crept up on me without me really noticing.
I don't remember it ever
being announced. So The Gold is a drama, BBC One drama, about the Brinks Mat robbery. Do you remember the Brinks Mat robbery in the early 80s?
I don't know what these words mean.
There was a robbery in the early 80s where a group of fairly basic South London crims, six of them, raided the Brinks Mat depot, which is right near Heathrow.
What is Brinks Mat depot?
It's just the name of the depot, Brinks Mat. It's the company, I think.
Okay. I see.
Brinks
and there was just money there.
Yeah, and there was, well, so
Boy,
they
this
went.
This sounds like The Curse. Is this what The Curse was based
the funny thing
on?
Is, this is
it sounded
like,
very
yeah,
similar.
This is the inspiration for The Curse, I believe. So The Curse is the comedy show from Tom Davies, etc., which is set in the 80s and about a robbery of gold. But anyway, what happened was this gang of fucking idiots, basically, tried to rob this, and then were looking for cold, hard cash, foreign currency, of which they heard there was like a million or whatever in this vault there. So they went to this vault and they held, it was an armed robbery, but they had no idea, not even in the vault yet, were loads and loads of bars of pure solid gold worth like 40 million pounds.
Wow.
In 1981. Think how much they'd be worth now.
Yeah.
And so they just thought, we'll take that. And so they literally, off the cuff, stole these hundreds of bars of actual gold.
But how do you offload them?
Well, that's the thing. So this is all, by the way, this is all facts. So I'm not spoiling it. I'm not discussing whether how good the show is. I'll talk about how good the show is. But I just didn't know these facts. But basically, the guy who wrote this drama series wrote a non-fiction book about it. He's like the world's expert on the Brinks Mat robbery. It was the biggest ever. It was one of the biggest ever robberies in history in the world, in terms of the value they stole. And he also said basically that if you bought any golden item since basically the early 80s up to including now, it will have some residue of the gold that they stole, because it basically went back into the system. It just gets recycled. And he said, basically, the company that had that gold that was stolen from them ended up coming back their own, some of their own gold from the criminal element. That, yeah.
Check your gold,
it's such
guys.
It's such an insane world, the gold market, that it just affected the, and he said it affected the whole kind of capitalist system of, particularly of the UK, and that...
Because it's underwritten by gold.
Yeah, and that the Docklands, all of that development, the Docklands, like Canary Wharf and everything, was built using money stolen, the gold stolen from the Brinks Mat robbery.
We need to investigate that medallion you're wearing, Boyd, and see where it's made.
See, exactly, yeah. So just the story is amazing. I was like, this is a whole amazing story that I didn't really know about. I'd heard of the Brinks Mat robbery, but and then the cast of this actual drama that I went to see, that I won't say what I thought because it's embargoed, and we'll review it in a couple of weeks, I think. Jack Loudon, favourite of ours from that show.
Yes.
The Wild Horses.
And the Slow Horses.
Hugh Bonneville, no less. Hugh Bonneville playing a detective who's really, really good, interesting character for him. Sean Harris from the Mission Impossible films.
Yes.
Tom Cullen, who's I loved for years. Dominic Cooper. Isn't it? It's a star-studded cast. Really, really good cast. And I will not... And we'll talk about it in a couple of weeks. Yeah, so that was really exciting. That was the evening.
Were there any canapes?
Do you know what? I think they were just drinks. There were drinks in the BFI special area. Yeah.
Not even a spring roll?
I don't think there was a spring roll. I mean, what the fuck? BBC. BBC can't spend...
If they were smart, they should have had canapes with gold leaf on top, you see, just a bit of a
nod. Yeah, if it'd been like Sky, but BBC can't spend money on things, hospitality like that, otherwise they'd be on the front page of the Daily Mail. You know?
Yeah. It's like, I remember going on the set of, God, like Luther season, what was it, four? Might have been four. And talking, it's the one that Rose Leslie was in, and she was in there, obviously she'd done Game of Thrones, where the HBO Craft Services was just like, you know, it's like walking into... fucking Waitrose. And then BBC, there's like a half-eaten loaf of Hovis in the corner of the room.
Yeah,
and
it's if you're just, lucky. Yeah,
it's a slightly different
it's
tempo.
It's exactly what you'd expect from, from the BBC.
Yeah.
The other thing I've been catching up on is Atlanta, because season four
dropped suddenly.
In between Christmas and New Year on Disney Plus, and was not, I mean, you'd barely even know if you didn't get the Disney Plus highlights email that I get, kind of, which also arrives almost halfway through the month, which it's covering, if you like. At least it seemed to in that case, isn't it? Saying Disney Plus PR's listening, you're furious by my claim. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, Atlanta surprised me by arriving at that time. And we should, it's easy to forget, but it's a fucking brilliant show. I have to swear to emphasize how good it is.
Okay.
Donald Glover's. And I think the last series, I think we reviewed, didn't we?
That first incredibly pretentious episode.
Yeah, which had a very, pretentious one word, ambitious, bold, kind of standalone story.
Yeah.
I mean, and not kind of, it was a standalone. In fact, there were four episodes, I think, out of that 10 that were literally complete standalone stories, nothing to do really, apart from thematically, with the main characters, the four main characters of Atlanta. This is back to actual Atlanta. It's also mostly took place in Europe randomly. Now, they're all back in Atlanta, and this is the final season. But it's just still so incredibly inventive, and I'm trying to. What is another word for bold? What should I go for?
Audacious.
Audacious. That's it.
Stick with bold.
No.
It's your brand.
Audacious is the other word. I mean, use audacious all the time as well. You find there's episode one, which really tickled me, is all built around an air fryer, because I was obsessed late last year with like air fryers and whether I should get one or not. Has anyone got an air fryer here?
Do you know what? Sarah Phelps tweeted about this exact same thing earlier today. Air fryers, what's up with them? Are they nice? Should I get one?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like people get them and they just don't use them.
What are they for? So. What do they do? What are they?
It's like an alternative to an oven, basically. It's a type of oven. It's a misleading name because it's really an oven.
It doesn't fry anything.
Not really.
It's an oven.
It bakes and it.
But I have an oven.
Yeah, but it kind of, it roasts and bakes really quickly. So it's much quicker than a normal oven. Uh-huh. Think about, you know, when you have to heat up an oven and it has to be preheated.
I have a fan oven, boy, so I don't really need to do that.
No, even fan ovens take a little while, don't they?
Not long.
Oh, okay. They're well, it's great. Even quicker than a fan oven.
Okay.
But also better, apparently. Like roast potatoes, people always say, is like the main thing that air fryers are brilliant at. And they proper, like, crispy skin. I can't believe I'm getting into this. But
you started now.
Do a bit in. It causes a massive scene, the air fryer return in the first episode of Atlanta. So it's fair enough. But I just like the fact that he tapped into how the people are fucking obsessed
the
with, aren't they, in a good
air fryers,
particularly during lockdown, everyone was talking about the air fryer.
Well, I only heard about it recently. I missed it.
No, I think it's because we listened to the Wolf in Our podcast and Tom Davis was talking
about it. Partly. Also, they have a big thing. They're on this morning, they've done a couple of, like, which should you get an air fryer or not? And obviously, James doesn't watch popular culture.
Absolutely not. I don't have an air fryer. Do you know what I've got, though? A steamer. I bought a steamer.
Recently?
About a year ago. Bought a steamer, It's mainly for steaming vegetables, but actually, it makes the best rice. Because you know, like you have your home at Indian, whatever you have, but the rice is always like soggy and it's wet and disgusting. Like, in the steamer, it's like straight out of, you know, your local brilliant curry house, and it's just the most amazing fluffy rice. I love it. So I love my steamer.
I feel like we should get some ads for steamers and stuff like that. Someone should be like,
Yeah.
Can we get sponsored
by steamers? Yeah.
Get the marketing team on and the air fryers.
Yeah.
So then there's an episode three. These are the ones I'm kind of halfway through. Episode three is all about D'Angelo. You know D'Angelo? You want a K1, mm-hmm. right? James Wayne.
It's no idea.
A famous, isn't he British, isn't he? Soul kind of artist. Yeah. And there's a whole episode where they try and become try and work with him. Basically, like, to get to D'Angelo, they're told they have to go through a secret hole in the wall of this like bleak room. It's so brilliantly weird and kind of magical. And then there's a whole episode about a serial killer who's trying to track down people who recorded videos of themselves dancing to Soulja Boy's song or Crank That. It's just completely, it's one
mad.
Of the least predictable, most inventive shows of the last 5 years or so. So, yeah, just shout out to Atlanta. And we didn't get in our top 20. I think I'd revise that now because hadn't seen it, you know, when we did our top 20. And it's also going to get completely lost because it arrived, you know, just before the new year in British terms. It was in a lot of American top 10s and 20s of the year by American critics. But British people, unless you watched it and went, you know, unless you kind of illegally watched it or made sure you watched it before it arrived on Disney Plus here, it fell by the wayside, which for an extraordinary show is a scandal. So, yeah, shout out for Atlanta. Season 4, brilliant.
Okay. What did I watch this week? So I finished Echo 3, 10 episodes, and it's not a limited series. It is.
Really?
It's conceived as an ongoing concern.
No, I didn't realise that.
That said, it has, like, if it didn't get another season, it wouldn't be the end of the world, because it does a good job. Again, just first, two things I want to say. First of all, it doesn't go at all where you think it's going to go. I know I said this last time, but it really doesn't. And I think also what it explores is not just, you know, the kidnapping and being kidnapped. It's the sort of the state of mind you would be in, you know, what it would do to you, like the lasting impact being kidnapped would have, like how it would affect you mentally. And it goes down some really deep, dark rabbit holes in that area, which is incredible. And I know we talked about the budget a lot, and I know it's not just the little lingering shots of the snails and stuff like that in this, but there is an episode that is quite literally an hour-long firefight. The whole thing is just an hour-long action sequence, pretty much. Right. And I was just like, I cannot imagine how much this episode cost. And then the episode after that, there's another one that goes on for maybe 40 minutes. And it's just like, I don't understand where they got this money from. And then there's a flashback sequence where they're all CGI youthed. And I'm like, well, that's got to be the budget of like 18 other shows on one episode. And it's just, it is lavish, it is lush, it is all of these things. I was kind of absolutely blown by it. Like, I felt like almost every episode.
Blown away by it?
Was I blown by it again?
I mean, God, there's a lot of money being spent.
I mean, that really is premium TV.
I mean, look, there are reasons why I subscribe to Apple TV Plus, because they go that extra mile.
They really do. Yeah.
I actually said that exact same thing on last week's podcast, and I picked it up in the edit, and I was like, oh, I've got to take that out, but clearly I've done it again. I'm leaving this one in. Yeah. Fuck it. Yeah. But yes, other than getting blown by Echo 3, which I very much enjoyed, and I do recommend that. You should definitely see it, and not just for the cheap thrills. I also started watching Vikings Valhalla.
Oh, that's on brand.
Yeah. It is on brand, but was a little bit disappointed. Yeah, so I watched the first episode of Vikings Valhalla, and I was like, you know, it's fine, but I kind of feel like it was just kind of lots of sort of wandering around, and like, it didn't hook me. I might watch one more episode of Valhalla before I give up on it, but it hasn't drawn me in the same way the first season did. So I'm a little bit...
I like how you say it.
Valhalla. Freydis and Harald and Olaf and Leif. Leif Erikson.
You shouldn't have started it.
But that's broadly speaking all I've watched this week, because I watched many episodes of many of the things that we've done this week.
Oh, yeah.
Which we will get into. There was a lot
I think I forgot to say that the Brinksmat thing I was talking about was called The Gold. Did I say
you
that?
You did say that.
Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah.
Okay.
You said The Gold, and you said there was a heist, and I was like, oh, were they after cash? Because it didn't click in my head that a show called Gold about a heist might have been about stealing gold.
Fine.
So I'm observant that way.
Good.
Right, shall we move on to this week's listener question? Well, this week's listener question comes from Gary Allen. And Gary says the following. I was wondering what the team thinks about the death of TV releases on physical formats, be it DVD or Blu-ray. Of the Empire 2022 top 20 list, I think Francis Pilot TV 2022 for 2020.
Actually,
just four releases exist in a format that can be bought, kept, and cherished forever. To the BBC's credit, Sherwood, The Responder, and The English are all available. Yet no HBO shows, no Disney Plus shows, no Netflix shows, and no Apple TV Plus shows. Is it a cost thing? No demand. As someone nerdy enough to adjourn his man cave, adorn his man cave with all manner of film and TV related tat, I'm growing increasingly frustrated that I cannot buy the TV I love on disc, that we placed in a box, put on a shelf, and lightly gather dust. That aside, the frequency that these shows disappear from streaming platforms seemingly overnight, restricting my access to them, also terrifies me. Thanks for the show, Gary. The man makes a good point. How do you feel? Are you enthralled to physical media, or do you give no fucks?
I mean, don't get me started. Yeah, it's infuriating. It is infuriating.
You can understand why they don't do it, though, can't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a dwindling market, it has to be said. But then, so were vinyl albums, you know, until everyone suddenly realised they really want to keep vinyl albums going, and then became kind of big again. And now there's absolutely no way that vinyl is going to go away anytime soon. And I think, I mean, it's slightly different because there's a whole audio quality thing about vinyl versus CD, etc. But I think there's still a market out there for really good TV shows coming on home video. And I actually think it's slightly, I was looking at the list where what was that guy's name?
This was Gary.
And I think what they do most of the time now with shows, like say HBO shows, is they wait until the new season of something is about to arrive, and then they'll release it on physical media. They did it with Succession. So I believe just before Succession season 3 arrived, 2 years ago, they brought out season 2 on DVD, not on Blu-ray, infuriatingly.
Well, House of the Dragons, available on DVD, Blu-ray, and 4K, came out before Christmas.
Oh, did it? Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't remember. And Game of Thrones is all out on Blu-ray, DVD, isn't it, et cetera. So I think they're big shows. They still know they can get a fairly decent market for them.
Yeah.
I don't know about the Disney Plus shows. That's interesting. American Horror Story used to come out, you know, for example, on physical media pretty reliably, but seems to have stopped since it went from Fox to Disney Plus.
Mm.
It is an issue, I think, and it wouldn't be so much of an issue if it wasn't the fact that you can't rely on your digital acquisitions not being randomly deleted
or written off for tax purposes.
And that is unbelievable, outrageous. And also, like, you have to really be careful if you've got, like, I've got Sky Q, as I believe Kay has, and like, you know, you have to be really careful you don't accidentally delete half your library when you download a UHD football game for 3 hours or whatever.
Yes, I must watch that.
Yeah. So, I think I've still got a massive collection of DVDs and Blu-rays, I have to say, in my cupboards at home, in my kitchen cupboards. But I very rarely kind of use any of them or watch any of them, but it's a comfort to me that I've still got them. And a lot of those are TV ones, not all of them. And there's loads of movies as well. But I think it's really sad. And I think, and the weird thing is, there are companies like this, the company that puts out vintage TV, Network, I think, in Network, yeah. And I know, for example, Crossroads, which is Russell Davies' show, Nolly, is all about the star of Crossroads from the ITV soap from the 70s, 80s, etc. And I believe they're bringing out like a 30-disc set of Crossroads.
Seems inessential.
On DVD, but they'll sell quite well, I bet, because people...
Nostalgia.
Yeah, nostalgia. It's fun to watch. These kind of... your face, James's face, when I say it's fun to watch. He did not agree. but they will sell, I bet, because there's a market out there for people, obsessive TV, you know, in quotes, nerds, of which I am one, for these types of shows. So yeah, the Dennis Potter show, Senior Ted, which I mentioned last week.
That you love, yes.
That I love. I've got that on DVD, and I was trying to find it for a friend at Christmas, to give them as a Christmas present. I couldn't find it, apart from on import, I think, from America.
But you don't watch these DVDs, because you always have a go at me when I do a rewatch. You know, how do you have time for rewatches? So do you ever watch any of these DVDs?
Rarely.
Okay, you just like to have them.
I like to have them.
Yeah, I understand that. Okay, you don't strike me as a physical media person.
No, and do you know what? It's so weird that Gary asked this question, because a couple of weekends ago, I've got one box of DVDs. I just can't get rid of them. So it's like the West Wing box set. I think I've got like Sex and the City, the OC. I've got the present you got me, the Girls on Top comedy DVD.
Still sealed?
Probably.
No, I've watched it. And I just can't bear to let them go. But I thought the other day, why am I still keeping them? Because I've completely, like, taken out my DVD player. I've stored it somewhere else. I'm never going to get it out. I'm never going to watch these DVDs. Why have I still got them? So I think I'm going to have to just give them all away and just accept that we've moved on. Everything you can stream now.
But to What's Boyd's point, I think this is the thing. Like, you understand why streaming services don't want to do this, because they want you to pay a monthly fee to just be a subscriber. Mm. And if they release it as DVD, that's one less thing you need to subscribe to get, because you've then got it in physical media. And I think they've probably done some kind of weird algorithm which has worked out that it's more for their bottom line if people subscribe than if they buy the discs. But the problem is, exactly as Boyd said, that they can delete this shit at a moment's notice, and then you've lost access forever. And that gives me anxiety. Like, if someone took my West Wing away, like, what am I going to do?
Yeah. Mm. But the thing is, as you mentioned, is like, who's got the time to rewatch this stuff? There's so
I
much.
Do.
Yeah.
James does.
Yeah, but he's not watching enough new stuff.
That's true. I sacrifice new stuff to rewatch The West Wing. I think that's, you know, it's important.
Thanks. Now you're making me think I shouldn't get rid of my West Wing.
You shouldn't get rid of it, because I'm never going to watch my DVD box at The West Wing, not least of all because it's in fucking standard definition. But I'm never going to get rid of it, because I want to know that if the world ends, if the zombie apocalypse comes, you know, if meteors come, if aliens invade, I will still have
the West Wing
somewhere in my house. And if I can find some way of like a pedal generator to power an old DVD player, I can still enjoy The West Wing. And
wow.
That's important.
This
to
is
me.
An insight into James.
You know, if you've got a good enough like UHD Blu-ray player like I have, that even SD discs look pretty good on it.
Yeah, so my Shield TV, my Android, yes. has like a 4K upscaling algorithm, whereas it uses AI to upscale.
Yeah,
and it does a decent job.
I watched something on standard definition the other day, and that was actually really good.
Yeah, if it's good quality, actually, it does a pretty good job of upscaling it. But I wonder whether, you know, because I don't know how you guys felt, but like when I was so like Boyd, okay, so you love your Supreme clothes, right? Right? And presumably they say something about who you are. Like when you wear it, like it's part of your identity. Rich, yes. But overpaid is what it says. It identifies you as overpaid. But other than that, it is a part of your identity. And like for me, as a just frankly nerd, like when I was growing up, when I was a teenager, my identity was my film collection. And I had like about 2,000 VHS tapes in my room, just like in just bookshelves full and full of VHS tapes. And I loved them. And then, of course, I rebought them all on DVD. And then, of course, I rebought them all on Blu-ray. And then I just stopped because it got ridiculous. But having those things, having that physical media on display, for me now, it's more books. Like I have endless, endless books in my house. It says something about it. It's part of my identity. And being in that environment surrounded by those things that feel, it's comforting.
Yeah.
And it feels like a big warm hug. And it feels like being home. So I think physical media does more than just give you the ability to watch something. It's owning a piece of that thing and being able to show it as part of your
identity.
Also, it's an archive of your life, right?
Yeah,
it's different
exactly
stages
that.
Of life. Yeah.
Exactly that.
The thing is, you just have to have space for it. So I don't have... That's the other thing, though. It's all very well and good collecting.
Storage space.
Yeah, exactly. I mean it's just gathering dust and taking up a lot of space.
Yeah,
unless you can present it beautifully, in which case, fine.
There's that thing people say, isn't that really kind of pompous thing people say, like if I go somewhere and and I haven't got any books, then I walk out or whatever.
What if they've got Kindles? What if they read a book a day, but they just do it on Kindle?
But I would expand it. If you haven't got either actual books, actual DVDs / Blu-rays, actual CDs / records, then you are some kind of freak.
Like, so if you have nothing,
I think that is terrible. Yeah,
isn't that just our age, though, Boyd?
I mean,
our generation?
It is. Yeah, I'm sure that for the youngsters,
because kids say this and go, whatever, granddad, I have a Spotify playlist of my
books.
Well,
they're just watching all this
something.
Shit on their iPhone, and yeah, not probably, but it's probably maybe it's healthier. I don't think it is healthy. I don't think that's true. As I said at the beginning, don't get me started on just the fact that you can't. Funnily enough, I was reading that in New York, there's the Barnes and Noble, I think it was. Which sells books, all of this stuff, physical media, and so it's had a massive revival. It had a massive like post,
yes,
you know, lockdown resurgence.
Independent bookshops in the UK have taken off again because again through lockdown people have picked up reading habits and they've stuck with it, which is great.
Tangible, because you know so much was done on Zoom and everything was just like.
I remember that. Tower Records, you know, I just miss, you know, you just browse Tower Records for hours on end.
Yeah,
it's sad little fuck when I was
100%. Like you
Woolworths.
Know,
hello.
Woolworths.
Yeah.
Who browsed Woolworths? Unless you were off to Pick and Mix.
Yeah.
No, they sold music there.
They sold some, yeah. Like
I got my first ever album from Woolworths. It was the London Boys.
Wow.
Yeah.
The London Boys.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I don't remember why, but that was the first album I ever bought.
Blimey.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Yeah, let's talk about that. But browsing HMV, like, and even now, like my happy place is like Waterstones. Like, I spend hours just wandering around Waterstones. Yeah. And I have a Kindle, and I read things on my Kindle. But
I'm anti-Kindle.
No, but see, I have an incredibly deranged process. I will read things on the Kindle, and if I read a book and I love it, I will then go out and buy the paperback just to put it on my shelf.
It's semi-deranged. I still get it, but
because I need to have it there. And then when I look at the book in my head, like the whole narrative kind of plays out, and it like. like reminds me of it, and I love it.
Mm. But people do still collect this stuff. Like Rich Kane, who's a lovely PR publicist, Rich. I saw the other day on his Instagram account. You see, he's obsessed with the Halloween movies. I'm genuinely obsessed with the Halloween movies, and he's got the last one, which wasn't even very good. And I think he would admit that he got it on every single format. He's got it on like just the two different covers of the 4K UHD one, the two different covers of the DVD one.
Slightly psychotic.
He'd admit that.
Yeah,
that's
just
an
Uber fan.
But I admire that level of conviction and adherence. That's the wrong word. That left. What's the word I'm looking for?
It's hard to say.
Devotion to physical media and collecting your favourite stuff. I mean, I've probably got about 10 different versions of Blade Runner. Think of all the different versions that came out of that film.
Oh, I have owned so many different versions of the Star Wars films. It's not funny.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, I lament the passing of physical media. I really do.
I lament the passing of physical media.
Especially magazines and stuff. Keep buying them, kids.
Keep buying magazines, people. Oh, dear. Kids today, et cetera, et cetera. Right, well, that was our question. Gary, I hope we answered it for you. If you would like your question read out on the Pilot TV podcast, or your comments, your thoughts, your musings, your philosophies, your random nuggets of information, which we do on Pilot Plus, then do send them over to us at the moment. Now, I was going to say, send them to us via DM on Twitter at Pilot TV Pod, which is what I normally say. Mm. But Twitter have completely bollocks the API. So now third-party Twitter programs aren't working at the moment. So I'm not actually able to get into them because I refuse to use the actual Twitter app. So at the moment, I've been pulling stuff off my own personal Instagram DMs, which is at James C. Dyer. So until Elon Musk...
Is this a way of getting more followers on Instagram?
Yes. Yeah. No, it's actually not, but that would be a happy side effect because I don't have enough. But so if you would like to message at the moment, maybe just try me on Instagram at James C. Dyer and I will get them there. More questions later in the week on Pilot Plus. Right, shall we talk news?
Yes.
And what I would like to talk about with news, a little bit before we do anything else, is Snowpiercer. Now, Snowpiercer clearly is a show that I know Kay is a massive fan of and clearly watches religiously.
I was rolling my eyes just then.
Yeah. Now, Snowpiercer, obviously based on the Bong Joon-ho film, but which was a series on TNT with David Diggs, which is on Netflix here in the UK. I really enjoyed the first season. I watched the second season. I gave up during the third season. But it had a fourth and final season ready to come. And even though I had no plans to watch it, I celebrate the fact that it's coming, except that fourth season is not coming because Warner Brothers, in their infinite wisdom, have decided not to air it, even though the whole thing has wrapped, it's shot, it's edited, it's in the can, it's done. But they've done another one of these tax write-offs and they've basically killed the final season of Snowpiercer.
It's so weird, isn't it?
It is so...
How much money can
deranged.
They really save by not putting it out?
Clearly more than by airing it. But so it's unclear what's happening at the moment. Now, I don't think it's 100% mothball. They will not be showing it on TNT. I know that for a fact. But I believe they are shopping it around in some capacity to see if someone will buy it. I don't know quite what the tax implications for that are, but that is something that they're doing. It's confusing to me.
And it was on Netflix here.
It was on Netflix here now. And again, I don't understand. Are Netflix going to show it over here or is it not going to come to Netflix either? That's the part I don't know. And Boyd, I was kind of hoping you might know the answer to that.
I would have thought Netflix would just show it. Well, couldn't they, but maybe, fuck knows. I really don't know. Yeah. But
right. Okay.
Why wouldn't they show it? Because I guess they still have to pay some money for the rights to show it to TNT. But yeah, I do not know. It's absolutely bonkers.
It is mad. So if you're a massive fan of Snowpiercer, good luck finding it. Mm. Maybe it'll come out in physical media. Who knows? Who knows? But yeah, that was the beat I had in my particular bonnet this week. We also had a trailer for the new season of The Mandalorian.
No.
Did you see this?
No.
Excellent. Well, it had lots of Mandalorians in it. Babu Freak was in it. Babu Freak from The Rise of Skywalker was in it. Hey, hey. what else was in there? Bo-Katan. Does she appear in it? I can't even remember. She might have done, she might not have done. But anyway, it's cool. Grogu does some Force stuff in it. It got me excited about Mando again, which was positive. So, maybe have a look at that if you haven't already.
I will.
Any other news?
Yes. Meryl Streep. Is going to be in Only Murders in the Building. This had a lot of Pilot TV pod enthusiasts messaging me and themselves and the podcast. But it very cleverly, the news was revealed by Selena Gomez in a video posted on Instagram, where basically just casually sitting next to Meryl Streep, looking very excited. Obviously, Meryl Streep, she has done TV for? She was in both series of Big Little Lies. She was in Big Little Lies, wasn't she?
She was in the second series of Big Little Lies. Yes, because she was the mother of
Nicole Kidman.
Skarsgård's character. The mother-in-law of Nicole Kidman.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, she was absolutely brilliant, obviously. And she's done a couple of TV bits, but this is, and we don't know whether she's going to be like, you know, in every episode or just like a guest appearance, whatever. But, you know, I mean, that show, as any regular listeners to the podcast know, is one of my favourites. And just the fact that we've now got Steve Martin, Martin Short, Selena Gomez, and Meryl Streep. What more could you want, quite literally, from a TV show?
I mean, sure. Now, we talk about this and you on the Empire podcast this week, Boyd, because Chris did not finish Only Murders in Building Series 2.
Oh.
And I seem to recall, though I might have been mistaken, that you started out liking it. No, you started out not liking it and then decided you did like it and actually enjoyed the second season in the end, but started out being a bit mixed on it. Am I right? Or am I just making that up?
I think you're making that up.
Okay.
I think I pretty much liked all of it, yeah. I don't remember. I'm pretty sure I liked all of it. Yeah.
Okay.
That has happened. I don't think it was that show.
All right. No. But you did watch it and you liked it.
Oh, I absolutely loved it.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
I think the mystery was slightly more contrived than in season one, but generally, it's absolute joy, a total joy from start to finish, yeah.
Noted.
Yeah. And season three also revolves around Paul Rudd, the killing of Paul Rudd, by the way. So he'll be in it quite a lot in flashback, I think. Yeah. I'm glad that you're discussing my fondness for Only Murders in the Building. Yeah.
Thought we'd have a
discussing
chat.
It and getting it wrong.
And getting it wrong.
Yeah,
as is our way. Did you see the first pick for the new season of Ted Lasso?
Yes.
Ted facing down Nate.
Yes. Exciting.
High stakes.
Very exciting, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was part of our Apple TV Plus thing in the, was it called the TCAs? Is that what it's called in America?
Sure, why not?
It's like the TV Critics Association, I think.
Well, they released like their slate for the next few months. There's a ton of stuff coming out.
But we don't have to wait long, I don't think, for spring, it said. Ted Lasso.
Yeah, it doesn't have a date. That's one of the ones that doesn't have an actual date.
Right,
But a lot of the other ones do.
Very exciting.
Yes.
I wanted to mention that the BAFTA Film Awards, that's film news, right? The nominations came out today.
They did.
And so we won't discuss that. They'll be discussed, I'm sure, in full on the Empire podcast. Oh, no, except we already recorded it,
so we missed that completely.
Oh, you'll have to do an extra bit. I'm sure Chris will do his little... And I'm just interrupting myself to do this report on the BAFTA.
He's not asked us to do it yet, so we might well not
maybe
do it.
Maybe he doesn't give a shit. But it's a TV event, you see. They are a TV event, the broadcast of the BAFTAs.
Uh-huh.
And what's changed this year is not only the presenters, which are exciting, which Richard E. Grant is the main presenter.
And Ali Plum.
I was going to get to
that. Is that what you... Oh, sorry.
Oh, James!
Oh, you
bellend. Should we do it again? Let's do it again.
No, keep it real. It's fine.
Yeah.
Because basically, I saw Ali Plum this week at the Nolly thing.
Oh, yes.
And so I was like, BAFTA host Ali Plum, formerly Kay of this...
Of the Empire podcast.
He's gone from strength to strength. He's literally co-hosting it with Vic Hope, the red carpet. Like, he's doing the red carpet bit. And Richard E. Grant and Alison Hammond, who I'm sure is one of your favourites.
Love her. Who is she?
I love Alison Hammond.
We all
she's
love
brilliant.
Alison Hammond. Yeah.
Hammo,
she's on
fantastic.
This morning, ITV. You haven't watched
very
it.
Very funny.
Never heard of her.
No. She won the Heat Best Presenter of the Year award last year.
Mm-hmm. She was on Big Brother.
Yeah, with
originally.
Dermot. She's going to be a backstage. There's a whole backstage area going to be within the main ceremony going out on BBC One, James. Yeah, you'll be loving it. But the other thing they're doing is, because I complain every year that it should be live. There's no...
Oh, no, but it is this year.
No, it's not completely live.
How is it semi-live? Because normally they do a thing where the whole thing plays out.
Yes.
And then it finishes.
Yes.
And then they put it on, which means it's really hard to cover live.
100%.
Are they doing it live with a delay?
All I know is, all they've announced is, it's not going out fully live,
it's
but
semi-live.
The last four categories, the biggest categories, like best film, I guess actor, actress and director, I'm assuming, are going to be live.
That doesn't make any sense.
No,
how
does all
that,
or
exactly,
nothing.
It doesn't
all
make any sense. So I can't work out how they're going to do it. And I so when I saw Ali, I literally was like, how is that going to work? And what the most annoying thing was, whenever I talked to Ali, you obviously go off on tangents, just, you know, and one of the first things I asked him was, how is that live for live thing going to work? And he was like, I think I can explain that to you. And then we never got back to it because we got on a tangent about something else. And I'm still desperate to know. I can't work out how it's going to work.
Neither can I.
So, but that's what they're saying.
I've always found that the way they did that staggered, I think it's deranged. You have the show play out and then it goes out on TV.
It is deranged.
Immediately afterwards. It's demented.
Deranged. Yeah, it's mad because people tweet about it. There's no embargo on the live tweeting from the event. So if you're at the event, you're tweeting who the winners are. So anyone interested, and then you see them delayed an hour later. But the biggest four awards are going out live somehow. Out by some magical thing on February the 18th or whatever that is. Yes.
Okay. Do we have any other news you'd like to share?
I have some news, and surprised Boyd I didn't bring it up.
Sorry.
Nicholas Lyndhurst, aka Ronnie from Only Fools and Horses. Long,
this broke just after our last podcast. Yeah, this is the biggest news ever.
Is joining the cast for the revival of Frasier. Apparently, Kelsey Grammer and him...
Incredible.
Worked together doing Man of La Mancha about 3 years ago at the Coliseum and fell in love, basically, according to Kelsey. And yeah, said, the quote was, I adore him. He's one of the funniest people I've ever worked with. And I accuse him of being a bit of a sandbagger because you don't see him coming. And all of a sudden, he's getting all the laughs.
I'm so glad you brought this up. Okay, because when this news was announced, mm-hmm. we didn't have that quote, right? That this is like came later. The original news, I think Variety broke, or one of the industry ones, Deadline or Variety or Hollywood Reporter. And all I saw on my feed was Nicholas Lyndhurst is the first co-star to join Frasier, the reboot of Frasier. I was like, what the fuck? I was like, that's so weird and random. You know, you probably never even heard of Nicholas Lyndhurst.
No,
I've watched Only Fools and Horses.
You
Rodney Uplonker. I know he is.
say Rodney Uplonker again.
What, did I sound a lot like Del Boy?
It was just great.
Rodney Uplonker.
Amazing.
He's a bit like Rodney.
He is,
James.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So, absolute random. He was also in Goodnight
Sweetheart.
I'm more
Sweetheart. Of a Boise, sorry.
Yeah, do Boise.
Yeah, do Boise.
Marlene. Hello, Derek.
I interviewed Boise Rodney. Once. He was an absolute delight, that actor. Sadly,
what, Boise?
Did
you meet Trigger?
Did I meet Trigger? I think I did meet Trigger, yeah. Yeah, he's brilliant. He's a kind of classical actor, Trigger. He's very like, you know, got a kind of posh accent. He completely, He was fantastic. But my point about Nicholas Lyndhurst is all that there was no quote from Kelsey Grammer about it. It was just the shock news of Nicky Lyndhurst.
And you're thinking, how the fuck are they connected? How did it all happen? First of all, I
tweeted about it and I had hundreds of one of my most engaged with tweets that I've ever done. And I didn't break the news, I just retweeted Variety or whatever. And all these people were like, it's amazing, like people were doing riffing jokes on it, you know, about like when he fought through the bar and you know, in Cheers in the Cafe Nervosa or whatever. And it became, people were tweeting pictures of it. It was just fantastic. There was one, I don't know who it was. In fact, I won't call him Bellet, but there was one, it was definitely a man who tweeted in the middle of all of this excitement, this announcement, oh yeah, why should it be a surprise that Nicholas Lyndhurst has been cast in Frasier? He's a great actor who appeared in two classic sitcoms. Get real, people. Like, why is it? And I'm like, hold on. He appeared in two British, the most British sitcoms of all sitcom. Why would Kelsey Grammer know about Goodnight Sweetheart or Only Fools and Horses?
And also, he hasn't done any roles recently for a long time.
He hasn't done any roles. If you look at his IMDb page, he hasn't done anything for quite a while, apart from some small roles in like some British. I'm not being dismissive of him. He was brilliant in both of those shows. And he's brilliant in, you know, he did new thingies. He was in that show on BBC, knew something or other. New tricks. There we go. Live Searching in My Mind for actual titles. That was very exciting. But he has not done anything for a few years, it's safe to say. So for all of these reasons, don't tell me you're not surprised that Nicholas Lyndhurst has been cast in Frasier was my message to that person. I nearly tweeted them back. I was like, come on. And I thought, no.
Don't engage.
But I thought that was such a typical bit of like, there's always one just thinks we're being, you know, I'm not making fun of Nicholson. It's one of the most unlikely bits of casting you will ever hear, isn't it? On any level.
It's deranged. Even I was like, what is happening?
Yeah. Oh, I think he's going to be great though.
So I'm very glad you reminded me of that because I forgot to mention that.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. My second bit of news is that Merman have announced they'll be doing a one-off special of There She Goes. I think you probably watched the series original, didn't you?
Of course. Yeah.
BBC Two, James, and it was about basically the experiences of writers Sean Pye and Sarah Crawford, whose daughter was born with a rare chromosomal disorder. David Tennant was in it, Jessica Hines, they were as the parents. And then there was a fantastic actress, Miley Locke, plays Rosie, who has the character with a severely learning disabled girl. And it was about the family and how they coped with that and how they dealt with the various issues connected to that. This special is going to deal with the family sort of struggling with the fact that 13-year-old Rosie's behaviour is increasingly wild because of obviously the hormones flying around as she goes through puberty. So this one-off special is coming and I'm excited about that.
I thought you were going to say the reunion of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers has caught your eye. But
absolutely not.
And you were getting drawn into the web of why the pink Power Ranger wasn't going to be taking part. But clearly neither of those things were true. Right. Well, I guess that is news then. Let's move on then to this week's reviews. And we begin this week with the latest in Apple's series of single word shows, beginning with the letter S, to join the ranks of C, Servant, Shantaram, Severance, Stillwater, Slumberkin, Surface, Suspicion, Swagger, and Schmigadoon. This time, we have Shrinking, which comes from the minds of Brett Goldstein and Bill Lawrence, purveyors of the glorious Ted Lasso. However, if that Apple show was all feel good vibes, then this takes a slightly more serious tack, with Jason Segel as a bereaved psychiatrist who decides to start confronting his clients with brutal honesty. Oh, and it stars Harrison Atwell Ford as well, which is wild. Boydie, is this Jung at heart or a total Freud?
You see, someone on Twitter this week, mate, pointed out how you do your question, your contrived punning question. I always go, wow. I always have a similar response.
You're my one-man hype man. Yeah.
I'm trying not to respond in
you're
that
not.
Way. They always
no, that
do.
Was quite good.
Or I always say, oh, that was quite good as well.
Yeah, so, yeah. That's good. I like you being my hype
it
man.
It was quite good. Wow. First of all, I think this could have been called Shrinkage. I mean, just saying, you know, it might have been just as good as Shrinking. This for me is a tale of more than one episode.
Okay, fine.
I watched episode one of this on my lovely Apple TV screeners portal thing, whatever it's called, and I was a bit disappointed. Because much as I like Jason Segel, I don't know, I'm calling him Segel.
He's a very French?
Likeable presence. The premise, I thought that's interesting. A little bit like Afterlife, the premise, because it's really like, so this bereaved guy, this bereaved husband, resorts to suddenly deciding to deal with people, his patients, he's a psychotherapist, in a particularly honest way. And I thought that's quite similar to Afterlife in a way. You know, the
Unfiltered
show.
And just, yeah.
But the actual tone of this is completely different. It's not, once you start watching it, then it's like, it's not much like Afterlife at all. But I thought the initial premise was interesting and different. And then you're like, the poster and all of the pre-release publicity, quite rightly, is Harrison fucking Ford is in it. And we know he's in 1923, right, with Helen Mirren. But that's like, he's playing a Harrison Fordian figure in that for me, a patriarch, you know, and it's like he is 80, whatever. Is he 80?
Something like that.
So I thought, you know, that this is more surprising. This is on the Nicholas Lyndhurst level of casting almost, because he's in a comedy, a half hour comedy. You said it was serious, but it is effectively a comedy with dark themes, you know. It's definitely.
Yeah, it's a dark comedy.
Yeah, dark comedy.
It's comedic,
exactly.
Certainly.
But still, it's generally comedic in tone. And him doing a half hour comedic in tone show with Jason Segel, I thought that is interesting and weird and surprising. And the idea is that Harrison Ford's character, Dr. Paul Rhodes, he runs this
clinic.
Well, yeah, it's like there's three of them, aren't there? Him,
practice.
Yes, the practice. That's the word I was looking for. Exactly. He runs his practice. Thank you very much. With Jason Segel and Jessica Williams, and Jason Segel's decided to talk to everyone honestly about their issues rather than kind of just soft soap them, which is what he used to do when he was being their therapist. But my point is, the first episode doesn't include much Harrison Ford, right?
No.
You know, considering he is like Harrison Ford,
it feels like a cameo.
It feels like a cameo. So I watched the episode, and then I thought, I've got to watch more of this because it's a bit weird that it's not there's not more Harrison Ford, which is for me the main reason to be excited about this show. Much as I like Jason Segel, from then onwards, I watched 2, 3, 4. He's in it all the time.
Do you know what I think? That I read an interview before I came on, and I saw that I think they sent him the pilot.
Oh, yeah.
And he had said, am I going to be in more than this? And they were like, if you're going to do it, yeah, we'll put you in all of it. I think that's why it's happened.
So this feels like it's exactly the situation that happened with Martin Sheen in the first episode of The West Wing, where the idea was he wasn't going to be in it very much. Right. And then when everyone responded and thought he was the best thing in it, then he's in it all the time after that.
But in this day and age, though, you don't engage Harrison Ford, employ him in any way, on any screen, on screen thing, and then not give him a juicy, meaty role. It's just like nothing.
Well, you might charge by the word. You don't know.
I say to everyone, my main message is, forget the first fucking episode, it feels a bit like...
It's not massively funny.
It's not massively funny. They have to establish the premise, which he isn't grieving. If you compare it to Afterlife, actually, I think it dealt with that slightly better in Afterlife. But once you get past episode one, it's great. I really, really liked it.
Okay.
And the best bits about it are when Harrison Ford is just sitting there bantering, for want of a better word, with Jason Segel and Jessica Williams in the practice. There's a brilliant bit. Like episode two opens, I think, with just a chat about like why Harrison Ford's character is so secretive. He doesn't like sharing his private life with the others. Like he's never invited them round to his house and all this kind of stuff. And this is all fascinating. And he's a really interesting character. And you find out, you know, he's got health issues. He bonds with Jason Segel's daughter who's going through a big difficult time with her dad.
Yeah.
It's much more interesting, and he's brilliant. He's really funny. He's, as you'd expect, he's absolutely amazing in it. And I've, my whole view of it was transformed. Literally, carry on watching episodes 2, 3, and 4. And we should say it's written, created by Brett Goldstein, the legend, with Bill Lawrence and Jason Segel themselves. And they've done a really good job. But it, that first episode is weird.
Okay. That's, do you know what? That's a great public service announcement, because I only had time to watch the first episode and I was very underwhelmed by the whole thing.
Were you?
Yeah, like, I mean, it was okay, but, you know, with the names attached to it, both on screen and off screen, I thought I was expecting really big things. And then I was kind of like, oh, yes, okay. And, well, you know, it's funny in bits. I don't know, so if he's grieving.
You didn't think it was funny enough? Like, that was...
It was funny enough, right?
Yeah, but not, it didn't like, say,
I wasn't like,
fire.
Oh my God, guys, everyone's got to watch this, right? And I just, yeah, I was underwhelmed. I mean, I did like, the highlights for me in that first episode were the neighbours. I think Krista Miller, who plays Liz, and Ted McGinley, who plays Derek. But yeah, I was underwhelmed. So the fact that you've said 2 onwards is, vast improvement. Yeah. I'm going to watch it.
See, that's interesting, because I actually got on rather well with the first episode. Yeah. I wonder whether it's because it was the one of all the shows this week, it was the one that I was a bit like, I wasn't really feeling. And actually, you know, for me, the selling point for it was Lukita Maxwell's character, who's his daughter Alice. I thought she was, the relationship that they had was fantastic. For me, that was the crux of it, the fact that he's essentially checked out of parenting when his wife has died, and he's been just this terrible dad to his daughter since then. So she's got this huge amount of resentment, and he's trying to piece back together the sort of shattered fragments of his relationship with his child. And I thought that made it really compelling to me. And I really enjoyed the relationship he had with Luke Tenney's character, Sean, who's one of his patients who has anger management issues. And again, it threw me for a loop a little bit on this, because I liked what he was building with him. And then, not to spoil anything, this episode ends in a very specific, unexpected way. I was like, oh, I thought I had a handle on what the show was, and then I realised at the end I didn't quite have a handle on what the show was. So it surprised me as well. But yeah, it's really well written, and it's good. It is good stuff. Even based on the first episode, I was I have to watch more of these.
Didn't you think that it was weird there wasn't more Harrison Ford though?
Well, no, because I genuinely, because honestly, cynical that I am, I thought, oh, Harrison Ford's in this. I was like, of course he is. Like, I expected it to be a minor role. I didn't imagine for a second he would be in it very much.
I think if it wasn't for the marketing, maybe I would think that. But he's literally, the main poster is just the two of them.
But well, I mean, look, there's another show this week which is heavily marketed on one person being in it, and that person has a very minor supporting role. So, you know, it's you know, they market with the big names, don't they?
Yeah, of course.
It did make me laugh when, what's the colleague called? The one who's obsessed with water. They're in the conversation and about drinking too much water, because that's a conversation Boyd and I have all the time.
What, Gabrielle? Yeah, I think that's Gabby. Jessica Williams' character. Yeah.
Gabby, yeah. And we often have that little argument.
And Harrison Ford has a very funny line about drowning there, which made me laugh a lot. It was very good. Yeah, no, that was fun. I enjoyed the show. I thought it was good. Shrinking Them, which comes to Apple TV Plus on Friday. He said, without checking, but reasonably confident that that's going to be the day that it lands on.
So, Friday the 3rd, I think you're correct there.
Indeed.
Friday the 27th.
Yes. Spot on that was. Prognosticating on my part. Anyway, right, okay, so next show this week, and next up we have Wolfpack on Paramount Plus, and this sees a group of high school kids dealing with a double whammy of an encroaching forest fire and a rampaging werewolf. Plus, it stars actual Buffy, Sarah Michelle Gellar, as an arson investigator who I strongly suspect knows far more than she's letting on. Kay, were you mooning over this werewolf show?
No, I was not. Put simply, no.
I should qualify this. That when Kay realised that we were doing 2 YA genre shows this week, she sent a screen grab of the synopsis because she didn't know what it was. She's going, oh, for fuck's sake.
Which, yeah. I mean, I won't say which one, but actually I enjoyed.
Okay.
Yeah, I think this is less fancy, more farce. I just wasn't invested in this. I didn't find the story very compelling, not particularly scary.
Yeah.
Should I set up the premise? I mean, it's this...
Go for it.
Okay. It's basically the show... I'm going to just read it from the blurb because I can't... It's focuses on 2 teenagers who've been caught in a wildfire and are wounded by a supernatural creature.
Spoiler, it's a werewolf.
Yeah. And in the aftermath, they discover they're werewolves and they develop an intense bond together, as well as they couple up with another 2 people who have also... They're werewolves as well, and they're adoptive children of a park ranger. Blah, blah, blah.
It's based on the novels by, insert name of author here,
Udo Van Belkom.
That's the one.
Edo Van Belkom.
Edo Van Belkom. And I
Canadian.
I Wikipedia'd him. Apparently he is a purveyor of erotica.
Wow.
He is a purveyor of erotic literature. Not only that, he has written a book on how to write erotica.
Wow.
So if this is a little
Since the pre-orders come up.
Yeah, exactly.
You need some hard copies of that on your shelf.
If there's a little bit steamy in this one, you know why.
Yeah.
That's where the fire comes from.
Steady.
Yeah, well, talking of the fire, you've got this like these sheep running out of the fire, all these weird animals, like just normal animals, not even like, oh, I don't know. I did not like this. I found it underwhelming, to use my word of the podcast. And at the end, I found it stilted in places and cheesy, like mainly at the end. I won't spoil it, but there's one character who leaves, he thinks he's going to die, so leaves a message for his dependents. And it was just pure fromage. I was just like, this is Stilton, right? It's terrible. Such overt exposition. I was not into it, just melodramatic at the end. With seemingly no danger. So, yeah, I will not be watching a second episode, but I will be watching a second episode of Shrinking. So I feel like it's okay.
Just go back to Shrinking.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I don't know what your problem is. No, I can see why. Very first scene of this show is when all the teenage kids are on this bus.
Yes.
And there's a huge wildfire taking place in the forests of Los Angeles.
And they seem largely unbothered by the fact there's a wall of flame about 100 metres away.
They're
only mildly concerned.
There's a face-off between the driver of the bus who wants to keep them all inside and the other people who want to go out into the to run away from the forest. I thought it was a very interesting opening sequence.
It's an interesting setup, isn't it? Like for a werewolf thing to start with a great big like wildfire is interesting.
It's created by Jeff Davis, did the adaptation, who is the creator of Teen Wolf, the series.
Yeah.
So he is like the wolf expert.
Yeah, he's wolf
of
man.
American
he is a wolf man.
American television drama. And we should say it's exec produced as well by Sarah Michelle Gellar. This is like the first show she's done where she's in it, you know. Probably, I mean, she's not in it much in the first episode, as has been alluded to. She would have been in it more from then on. But this is the first TV thing she's done for years and years and years, isn't it?
It's been a while.
She basically, as far as I can tell, kind of semi-retired from being in Hollywood films and TV.
She's raising a family.
Raised a family, exactly, with Freddie Prinze Jr., her husband.
Yep.
And what a brilliant 90s couple they were, 80s/90s couple they were. So it's exciting from that point of view, and I'm just excited to see her back. And it feels like the kind of show she would like to exec produce, because there's a kind of, you know, Buffy, there's certain things in common genre-wise with Buffy. I thought it was kind of, it wasn't what I was expecting, basically. From the opening sequence onwards, there's a whole scene, there's suddenly the show cuts to like a gay club, nightclub.
That was an interesting segue.
Like, suddenly it's like you're in
what
Queer as Folk. All of a sudden. And this like hot young guy, played by Tyler Lawrence Gray, who's a twin, I think, with his sister, played by Chloe Roy Robertson.
Who goes the excellently named Luna the werewolf.
Yeah, Luna and Harlan. they go to the same school as the two characters we meet earlier, right? There's suddenly this like the whole like gay romance thing going on. There's like a sidebar of the show, which I wasn't expecting. And then Rodrigo Santoro pops up, who's the father of the two kids, kind of like in the middle of the fire, launching this extended speech to his kids.
What did you think about that speech?
It was just bizarre. It's odd. It's an odd show. And I guess I wasn't expecting the weirdness and the unpredictability of it. And there are cheesy moments. I know what you mean. But I thought in the end, I quite like, and it's filmed in a kind of, it's also, the way it's shot is quite weird and interesting and unusual. There's loads of like quite heavily set up visuals, you know, of like people, you know, like people running through the forest in the end with the wildfire going on, like, you know, in silhouette. It's quite stylized. That's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm grasping for. It's quite stylized for this kind of show as well. And, you know, the colors and the way it's shot, etc. So, I mean, I enjoyed it.
I have questions.
Go on.
First and foremost is one where there's a bit where after escaping from the wildfire and the bus situation, one of our heroes, Blake, sees her dad, who's a bit of a dick, and they get into a bit of a passag argument about where she's been and why she doesn't have a phone. And then he swears, and then she gets all aggro with him because he's swearing and he's setting a bad example. And at no point does she just think to say, oh, by the way, my entire class just got mauled to fucking death 200 yards down the road. But no, I'm going to talk to you about whether or not you should be swearing and not the fact that I'm now scarred for life by having watched people brutally murdered. Doesn't come up. Another kid who's survivor is in hospital. He wakes up, his mum tells him off for this, is nagging him about that, and he's like, oh yeah, no, I've got a bit of a headache. Can you see this bite? Is it going to leave a scar? Your whole class was brutally murdered in front of you. How is that not the first thing you bring up in conversation? I don't understand. And that
kids
was just,
today, they're self-involved.
Do you know what? Perhaps it is. If it's not on Twitter, it's not real. He was like, oh, whatever, happened in real life. What is it? Yeah. What is this IRL anyway? Honestly, just...
Also, you know that thing you said about the girl not having email or phone?
Yeah.
I mean, how much was that rammed down your throat?
Oh, I mean, like, so much.
Come on now. But I got
suppose,
the message.
But I suppose for kids today, that's like saying,
yeah.
I live on another planet. Like, it's
totally
weird.
I know, but
totally
we got it, like,
weird.
The first time anyway.
Yeah, they do ram that down your throat as well. Yeah, there's a lot of focus, again, on her skin. That's a main, major plot point in the first episode. Look, I love a bit of urban fantasy. I love a YA show. I love a supernatural YA show almost more than anything else. Mm. And God knows we've had a lot of them. But, you know, in a world where you've got your bastard son and the devil himself, in a world where you've got your Carnival Rose, in a world where you've got all of these great YA shows that Netflix and Amazon, whatever, just cancel at the drop of a hat, there is no place for this because it is just nowhere near the quality of those other shows.
There's no place for this.
Look, I've seen the first two of this because I was only provided with two episodes, so I have not seen any more than two. Perhaps, you know, it changes dramatically. But in those first two episodes, Sarah Michelle Gellar, who I love because she is Buffy, is in this so little that it's very frustrating. You want more of her on screen, you don't get her, because this is very much about the kids, even though all the posters just have Sarah Michelle Gellar on them.
There's more of her in episode two, though.
There's more, but not much more. Like, again, she's a really minor role at this point. Again, her role may increase after episode two, I could not say. But I just thought, what's this doing that's new? What's it doing that's interesting? Like, the Wall of Fire. So the wildfire is an interesting idea, but they don't really maximize that. And again, like, there's a bit where she goes back to her house, which has been ravaged by wildfire half an hour earlier, and she's just strolling in there, and oh, it's a little bit crispy, and there's just a few bits. It's like, I'm pretty sure a wildfire would have reduced the whole neighborhood to ash if the fire had gone through this area. It just, I'm not sure that's the way flame works. Things like that bugged me. And also the quality of the CGI was, I would say, quite lamentable.
Yeah, even I picked up on that, actually.
I didn't think
during
it was
the
that.
Wildfire, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't think it was that bad.
Have we like, said...
Did you ever watch the TV show of An American Werewolf in London?
No.
So it was a genuinely terrible show, which ran in, I want to say, either the late 80s or the early 90s. I don't know which it was. It was probably the late 80s. But the werewolf was just brown tights... literal tights and like a shaggy mask type thing. And the effects were so awful. And this just reminded me of that. It was like the CGI equivalent of that. And I was just a bit like,
I thought the fire scenes were put,
the fire looked fine. Yeah, the fire looked fine.
You mean the creature?
It was more the creature effects.
I thought that big creature with the gnarly, like, you know,
the sheep.
The sheep thing was
the sheep looked fine.
It was a
CGI sheep, boy. What do you want from it?
The CGI sheep was perfectly good.
Have we said what the role that Sarah Michelle Gellar plays?
She's a fire investigator, but there's more going on.
Yeah, but the thing is, she comes in, she's an arson, and she's like, "Hello, I'm an arson investigator. Yeah. Shake my hand." You're like, "Hang on a minute, something's not right here. Yeah. My spider sense is tingling. I see something's going on
Definitely.
Here." But I did watch the second one straight after the first one, but partly because I kind of felt like at the end of the first one, I felt a bit like, because I was looking forward to this because it's very much my bag. And I was disappointed. Yeah, so I watched the second one and I was more disappointed.
Maybe I liked it because it wasn't the kind of thing that's in your bag.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah,
but I just felt a little bit like I didn't think the writing was really up to snuff. Like the dialogue just felt a little, like some of it was just like really just like oof. And then really on the nose, and there is a bit with a dictaphone in the first episode. And I was just like, oh, come on, this cannot be a thing that's happening. And it just...
Stilton, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it was, you know, Kay's not wrong. We were very much in the kind of dairy aisle off Sainsbury's. You know, there was a distinct, you know,
small
fermentation process. Yeah, it was very much cheese board territory. And you know, that was sad because it's werewolves and I like werewolves.
Wow.
Sorry, I can't be more positive about that one. It's not going on my YA to watch list, sadly. But, you know, hey, if you want another YA show because all of yours have been cancelled by Netflix, then maybe this will scratch that particular itch because it airs on Paramount Plus on Friday the 27th of January as well. Okay, well, finally this week, we have a Disney Plus original, the second Disney Plus original after Wedding Season, in fact, specifically Extraordinary, which stars Mireille Tyers as Jen, and she's a 20-something with no superpowers whatsoever, which isn't extraordinary in itself, except when you consider that everyone else in the world gets their superpowers on their 18th birthday. So she's extraordinary by not being extraordinary. Boyd.
Yes.
Like 90s Eurodance act Snap... has Extraordinary got the power?
Oh.
That's poor.
That's my noise.
Was that poor? Was that poor?
That's my new noise.
I thought that was fun. Were you another Snap fan?
You really worked hard at that. No. Did you? Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised you even know about Snap.
I know Snap. I was alive in the 90s. We established this on Pilot Plus last week.
Yeah, you paid attention to culture in the 90s and then stopped paying any attention afterwards.
I had the power. Okay. I used to look at Snap. Name another Snap song. What was the one?
I can't.
Was Rhythm is a Dancer Snap, or was that something else?
I think that might be someone else.
Yeah, I think someone else.
I don't know. I'm going to Google it now. Right, okay. Here we are. Right, Snap 80s. Band. This is fucking great.
Yeah,
this
is
here we go. Here we go. Snap is a German Eurodance group formed in 1989. Okay, here we are. Give us some songs. What did they do? More about Snap. There we go. Give me more about Snap. I'd play a song, but I don't think we've got a PRS license. We're not allowed to.
He's talking to his iPad.
I'm talking to my iPad.
Live James interaction with.
Oh, here we go. Their best known hits are The Power and Rhythm is a Dancer.
Okay.
There you go.
Right.
You doubted me.
You doubted
my knowledge of Snap.
Cut it out. Apologia. We're saying, he's
apologia. Cut none of this out. I want this as a record of my Snap knowledge.
Yes. Anyway. Extraordinary.
Yes.
Is really good fun, is the bottom line. I mean, could bang on about that. It's got, I was slightly, not dreading is a hard word.
I was dreading it.
Okay. There are a lot of takes, aren't there, on superheroes and superpowers. Remember Misfits was like.
Misfits was quite good.
It was good. But I'm just saying, it's so not new.
No.
To come up with another take on superheroes and people having superpowers. And yet, this is proof. However you might want to complain about how there's nothing new on TV or in films ever, and people complain about prequels and sequels. I saw some pompous film critic the other day actually saying how outrageous it was that there were 6 prequels and sequels in a list of the 10 best films of the year. Well, if those films happen to be good, that good, it doesn't actually matter that they're a prequel or a sequel. Mad Max Fury Road. I've gone on a slight tangent.
One of the greatest
films of the last, I would say, decade. Is it decade? 10 years? Obviously, it's a sequel, but it's absolutely brilliant. So, in the end, you realise it's all about the quality of the show. And this is a really clever, smart, funny show. And the premise that everyone, when they turn 18 in this version, and it's set in present-day London, basically.
Yeah. But it just happens, Shadwell, in fact.
Right. It's a version of present-day London where as soon as you reach 18, you have some kind of superpower bestowed upon you. Is interesting and fun. And by the way, it's a Disney Plus show. It has a budget big enough for almost like in the background, a lot of you suddenly see people flying around and, doing all kinds of superpowers. Type stuff just by the by, just barely noticeable. I think like that shows sometimes this kind of show, even though they don't overdo it, just having a decent budget for VFX, etc., is quite important. Because if you're going to establish this world, to do it on the cheap, I don't think would work. So it's got the budget it needs, is my point. But the actual show, scripted by relative newcomer Emma Moran,
who wrote this while doing her film studies degree or whatever it was. Yeah,
right. She's a script writer for Have I Got News for You, apparently.
There you go. And it's from Sid Gentle Films, producers of Killing Eve. This first episode, remember the Killing Eve first episode? Forget all of the subsequent. I think it went on too long. I think the whole Killing Eve, giving each different season to a new showrunner, was misguided in the end. But at its core, when it started, the freshness and the wit of Killing Eve was all in the dialogue and in the script and in the cast.
Yep.
And this does the same thing. The script is really smart and funny and witty. The characters are charming. The cast, you mentioned Mary Tyers, Sophia Oxenham as her best mate, Bilal Hasna, Luke Rodderson, who pops up as what is initially a cat called Jizzlord. It's really funny.
One of the best gags, but yes, I love
really
that.
Gag. So it's just the actual detail of the show as a viewing experience. It's really entertaining and smart, and you kind of go along with it. So even this ludicrous, ridiculous premise that this one person for some reason doesn't have a superpower and everyone else does, it just works, and it's funny, and she exploits the idea for all it's worth. There's an opening scene where she's going for a job interview and she does the thing, she says all the stuff that you would never say in a job interview. She's completely honest about everything, which is obviously completely backfires because it's idiotic.
Yeah, she's honest about her CV.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a really, really good show. It's all I can say. It's well directed. It looks great. The cast are all brilliantly. They're all very, very charming and funny. I was kind of amazed by how good it was.
And the key, I think, the casting here. And don't get me wrong, I do think the scripting, the casting here is genius because all relative unknowns.
Totally. Yeah.
I would say, but actually, Mairead Tyers, who plays the main character Jen, is such a perfect bit of casting and is so fantastically good in her delivery. Mm. And I think everything you need to know about the show, you know within the first 2 minutes of it because it starts with a a job interview,
yeah.
which is laugh out loud funny and sets up exactly the tone of what this show is. It's sweary, it's rude, it's quite edgy, it doesn't mess about, and it's subversive in a way that, yeah, sure, oh, yeah, everyone's got superpowers, but actually the powers they have are utterly stupid and always a bit useless. And I love that. Like, Siobhan McSweeney, Sister Michael, who's in this, and is a person who can manipulate technology, except she's of a generation who doesn't understand technology, so her power is utterly pointless because she's just controlling the TV with a finger but doesn't understand how it works. And it's just all very, very well observed and very funny.
You say the superpowers are completely useless, but we have to touch upon one of the funny...
Orgasmo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's funny.
The guy, the online date guy who she goes on a date with, and he basically gives people... He makes them orgasm just by touching them. So then it's like the hilarity of the fact that he just doesn't want to touch her, and if they decide to maybe have sex, he wants to be able to do that just on his own without his special powers. It is hilarious.
It's very funny.
This is funny, fresh, original. Yeah. I love this. This is so good. The writing is so good.
She does brilliantly, you're right, put the superpowers to great comedic use, so that her F-buddy, basically the guy she has sex with, just literally flies off after those shack. Basically, like, is it,
her F-buddy. That's very genteel of
him. He's an F-buddy, isn't he? He's a fuck-buddy.
Yes.
Then also the guy who's caught, shall we say, in an embarrassing situation, who rewinds time.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
That's really funny. So she really is milking it. I don't want to get... I'm almost going to get carried away about this show, but I was thinking about it. This is a Disney Plus show.
Yeah.
Disney Plus, a massive conglomeration, you know, huge big player in the world of, you know, streaming TV. And they've effectively given a completely fresh new young cast and new young female showrunner / writer to do what they want to do.
How exciting is that?
So, yeah. I mean, you can slag it. It's so good that it kind of makes you, and it's so brave for them.
Oh, he's looking for, he's trying to avoid saying, but he's audacious.
To commission these up and coming talents.
Yeah.
It's kind of brilliant, really. It almost justifies the whole invention of Disney.
No, it does a bit.
And I will never slag them off for taking months to show American Horror Story ever again.
I mean, that's a lie. Yes. I think you're absolutely right. I think it's really funny. And I watched, I think, four episodes of this back to back. I couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah, it's very addictive.
Where else will you get? Yeah, the first episode, you'll have fake masturbation scenes, orgasms, and Hitler.
That's right.
In one episode. Mm. I mean, that's never going to happen.
Genuinely, but some of the gags, like the Hitler gag, which I won't go into, but properly hysterical, brilliantly observed, and just wonderfully delivered. And like, so Sophia Oxenham's character, Carrie, also another brilliant bit of casting. She can channel the dead, but the way she does it is so funny.
And it's actually, her character is very sweet. And
yes, very
character.
Sweet.
So
yes.
You've got, you know, the balance of all the characters.
Because it's a flat share comedy at heart, isn't it? Like, it's a hangout sort of thing. But it's just in this kind of crazy world. And the idea is that she's the only person without superpowers and she wants superpowers. She doesn't have superpowers. And it's a bone of contention.
I really like this. Makes me excited about TV.
This has even broken through the hard anti-comedic shell of James.
I laughed out loud multiple times.
If anyone doesn't laugh within the first few seconds of watching that first scene.
Yeah.
It's
because it's so caustic, and that appeals to me. Like, that really made me
also
laugh.
Also, like, shock funny, not in that over. Wait, but you know, like, when she's talking about, I've talked about this with you before, but like the sitting in the seat awkwardly and explaining why, and I'm like, yes,
just so funny,
very funny,
and very well observed. I just, it's very, very good, and I'm as surprised as you are that this got commissioned, let alone made. But yeah, it actually made me laugh. I'm like, oh, what is this strange sensation I'm having? Is this laughter? Like, it was very weird.
Why are my lips moving?
Yeah,
like
this
that?
Show's superpower is to make people laugh at a touch. Clearly, that's like the Orgasmo guy. But yeah, this was genuinely great. I really enjoyed Extraordinary. And this comes to Disney Plus on Wednesday, the 25th of January. And I should point out that we actually have a special Extraordinary podcast coming. It's one of now. It's a sponsored podcast by Disney, which is not the reason we like it, incidentally. I should point that out. That was a happy coincidence. But so we're doing a sponsored one-off Extraordinary podcast. It will be on the Empire podcast feed and it will be on the Pilot podcast feed. However, and this is crucial, if you are a Pilot Plus subscriber, at present, I'm not planning to put it in the Pilot Plus feed because it's technically advertising. Like, it's a sponsored podcast and the Pilot Plus feed is for no ad content. But you might want to listen to it anyway because it's just me, Kay and Chris talking about the show that we really like, and actually it was loads of fun. And it's the interviews with the cast, so you probably do want to listen to it. So actually, if you are a Pilot Plus subscriber, I'd like some feedback. Do you want these sponsored things to appear in the Pilot Plus feed or do you not? Like, let me know, because I can put it in or I could not put it in. It's kind of up to you guys. But most people who subscribe to Pilot Plus now don't subscribe to regular Pilot. I may have gone into too much detail here. I've lost you, haven't I? Okay, fine. Let's stop.
Yeah.
Let me know what you think, guys.
Out,
let me know what you think. Anyway, that's coming soon. Do listen to it. It's us banging on about Extraordinary, which is, in fact, fact, extraordinary. Boydy, what else is out this week? I'm glad you said that. It's Lockwood & Co., which is on Netflix on Friday, but we can't review it because it's embargo, but that will be on Pilot Plus this week. But there must be other things, Boyd.
Yes, and Joe Cornish will be on next week's podcast.
He will, talking to him. True.
There's a show called Deepfake Neighbor Wars, which is on ITV2 on Thursday, right? Which uses the technology of deepfake video, like, you know.
Is this good? It sounds shit. I read about this.
We've had this discussion already, Kay. You know, I've seen clips of it. It's actually quite funny. So the technology they use in the capture, basically, they use this to do comedic sketches, like basically about famous people. Like there's Idris Elba, Kim Kardashian arguing with each other about, you know, celebrity neighbor wars. It's a genuinely bizarre
concept. What do you think, James? Does that
sound
funny to you?
Obviously, James is going to hate it. But try it out. It's on Thursday on ITVX, if you can get ITVX. SWAT is back on Sky Max now on Sunday.
Is that the Sean Ryan show?
Yes, I believe it is. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, but it's like it's a you know, episodic procedural, yeah, so my kryptonite.
Course, you hate it, yeah, of course. There's a really good comedy on Channel 4, which we would review it, actually. I should have insisted on it. This happens a lot. Everyone Else Burns with Simon Bird. It's got a great cast generally. Kate O'Flynn is his wife, Amy James Kelly, Harry Connor, Lolly Adefope, who's brilliant, of course, in Ghosts, and Alan Partridge. Kadeef Kirwan is in it from Slow Horses. But it's set in a Christian cult, a fictional Christian cult who believe in the end of days, who believe that the apocalypse is going to happen any minute now. And I thought it was really funny. I did host the screening of it, I think before Christmas, so I am slightly biased, but I still think it's genuinely really funny, really clever, really smart. All the things you said about the script for
Extraordinary,
I would say go for the script of Everyone Else Burns as well. But that's just me. Not necessarily just me, but that's me. Then what else is there? The Catch. Channel 5 has got a new drama series starting on Wednesday. And this is a 4-episode Channel 5 drama. And you know how normally they strip them across the week?
Yes.
This is going out weekly. This is a whole new revolution. Wow. Yeah. It's a revolutionary world. Jason Watkins is in it. It's got quite a good cast. Poppy Gilbert. And Ewan Barnard is in it from 1899. Future Doctor Who star as well. And it's kind of about a guy who is protecting his daughter who meets her new boyfriend who is played by an Ewan. Is that how you pronounce his name? I think so. Barnard, Inuran, Barnard. James is shaking his head, doesn't know. Who's kind of rich and charismatic, but might be a wrong on it. It's kind of, is he a wrong or not?
Right.
That seems to be. But yeah, that's supposed to be quite good. The Catch, Channel 5, Wednesday, showing on a weekly basis. That might be about it.
What is our pick of the week?
Oh, without a doubt, Extraordinary.
Yeah, Boyd's going for Wolfpack.
No. I was thinking it is Extraordinary. I was thinking of Shrinking or something.
Shrinking is good. Shrinking is good. But yeah, it probably is Extraordinary. Which is in itself extraordinary. Right, that is it for this Monday's show. If you had the occasional giggle, then do bestow upon us a review and a 5-star rating on the pod platform of your choice. And do feed our self-esteem, please, by following us on social media at James C. Dyer, at Kay Ribeiro, and at Boyd Hilton. If you would like more of us in your ears, do sign up to Pilot Plus at empireonline.com/pilottv. And you get to hear our second show on Thursday, where we'll be reviewing Joe Cornish's Lockwood & Co. and answering your questions as well. In addition to a little bit more Happy Valley chat. On next Monday's show, Russell T. Davis, the notorious RTD, will be with us on the show to talk Nolly. Plus, Joe Cornish will be on chatting to Boyd about Lockwood & Co. And what else happens? Your Honor returns for season 2 on Paramount Plus, and Dear Edward comes to Apple. So we'll be up to our eyeballs in some of those. Until then, however, pilot out.